talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, welcome back. Great to have you with us. And still to come on today's show, in a few moments, Erica Dombach, the head coach of the defending national champion Penn State women's soccer team. They're off to a 1-0-1 start. They play to a 1-1 draw with 6th-ranked West Virginia and beat Hofstra Sunday 3-1. They have Brigham Young coming up tonight at Jeffrey Field this evening. And Penn State ranks 2nd in the nation. We'll hear from Erica Dombach in just a few moments. And also in the next hour, Penn State and the Olympics. A few select comments from some of the coaches, including some intriguing in-depth comments on the officiating from Cale Sanderson that took place at the Olympic Games in Rio. And the great head coach of the Nittany Lions doesn't mince any words. Now, he was in the stands. He was not coaching Frank Molinaro. It was Cody Sanderson was the one that was sitting down there with Frank. Cale was in the stands, but he was adamant about what he witnessed, and his comments are worthy of extensive conversation. Of course, Chuch Ruiz dealt last night by the Phillies to the Dodgers for A.J. Ellis. And trade made. Ellis, very popular, by the way, in Los Angeles. And, of course, Ruiz has been popular for years in Philadelphia. But this is one where both guys cleared waivers. Ruiz is eligible for postseason play because the deal was made before August 31st. So he is postseason eligible. And we'll see what they want to do from there. Tim Beckman, who had been a volunteer assistant in North Carolina, the former Illinois coach, has now stepped down from being a volunteer assistant because he does not want to be a distraction to the program. And the announcement came one day after the school confirmed that Beckman, who was fired at Illinois amid allegations he mistreated players, was working with Tar Heels coach Larry Fedora and the defensive staff helping to break down film and scout. And once that story came out, then there was some heat put on. Fedora had taken criticism for bringing on Beckman. School investigation had concluded that he influenced medical decisions, pressured players to play hurt. In April, he settled a wrongful termination lawsuit against Illinois for $250,000. Wednesday, Fedora defended the decision to have Beckman work with his staff, saying, "I don't believe everything I read, all right? I know Tim. I know his side of the story as well, so I was comfortable with it." Fedora described the decision as helping a friend, and he and Beckman worked together previously at Oklahoma State in 2007. Meanwhile, Fedora said that Beckman agreed with him that his presence had become too much of a distraction. And UNC Chancellor Carol Folt first learned that Beckman was even on her campus Wednesday, saying, quote, "I'm surprised and disappointed. The decision for Mr. Beckman to withdraw from his volunteer position was the right thing to do, and moving forward, I don't expect this situation to recur. I continue to put my great deal of trust in the director of athletics, Bubba Cunningham, and Coach Fedora to educate and develop our student-athletes and to ensure we meet the high standards we expect at Carolina." I love the prepared statements. Really, nobody speaks like that. Nobody speaks like that, all right? Nobody. Nobody talks like that. All right, but that's the news of the day. All right, Penn State women's soccer program. They are the defending national champions. Beat Florida State last year down in Cary, North Carolina, 1-0 at Rocky Rodriguez's goal. They are the defending national champs. They drew a record crowd for their opener with West Virginia last Friday night. Nearly 5,700. Tonight they're back in action against Brigham Young, and we bring in the outstanding head coach of the Penn State women's soccer program, Erica Dombach. Erica, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to get a chance to chat with you.
Yeah, same here. Okay, you get the tie with West Virginia on Friday, beat Hofstra yesterday 3-1. There is usually a building process that happens in a season that the coach is looking at. I don't know how much the players look at it, but you're looking at it. As a starting point in the building process, what did you think of the first two?
Well, obviously, the momentum from the crowd on Friday night was fantastic. I think the energy in at Jeffrey Field carried our team, especially through the second half when West Virginia really started coming after us. I thought overall the performance was right where I wanted it to be going into Friday night. And I think we saw some players step up. And Amanda Dennis, who's our new goalkeeper, Alina Ortega-Jurado, who needed to step in to play right back because of the absence of the U-20 players. So overall, I was really pleased with Friday night. And then Sunday, the performance wasn't where I wanted it to be. I think we needed to figure out how to fight through some fatigue, and that wasn't good enough for Sunday, but an area of focus moving forward.
Right, and you talked about Ian Goal. What was it about, you know, seeing the live action like that and how she reacted to that?
Well, the big thing is typically when a young player starts in goal for you or a freshman starts in goal, they don't have much of a presence. Even if they can make the save or do the kicking or whatever it is, they typically can't communicate because they're kind of frozen by the big stage. And that wasn't the case with Amanda. She stepped in. She was vocal. She led the back line. She had a presence for us. And that shows me a tremendous amount of confidence that she has in herself and her team.
Charlotte Williams had a pair of goals for you yesterday, just a sophomore. What is it about her game where you see something you can build upon with her?
Charlotte is one of the more creative programs that we've had here in my time. She's two-footed. She's shifty. She can jump out of tackles, and her balance is excellent. So she's tough to keep up with. You know, I think in order to take her off the ball, you kind of have to use the muscle because that's not her strength.
Right.
But typically, you got to catch her to kick her, and she's a quick little water bug. So I think she will be a big piece for us this year.
Yeah, it's her first career multi-goal game, and also it was great to welcome back Selena Williford. She scored two. What did it mean? What does it mean to get her in, considering some of the players you have out right now?
Well, the best thing about Selena's goal, the funny thing about Selena's goal is the last time that she competed for us was in the Elite Eight 2 years ago against Texas A&M, and she scored almost the same goal from about 30 yards out. As soon as she struck it, as soon as it came off her foot, you knew it was going in the back of the net, and she needed that confidence on Sunday, and certainly we've seen her play improve over the course of the preseason, and now she's playing with a good bit of confidence, and like you said, we need her. We need the depth, especially in the middle of the midfield right now.
You talked about the crowd on Friday night, which was a record crowd. What does that tell you about the growth of soccer in this area and the impact your team is making on that growth?
There is no better feeling than walking out to Jeffrey Field and seeing the stands filled. And in this particular case, there were so many more students than we've grown accustomed to. I think the community has always been fantastic with our program. But to see the excitement of the student fan base that the students brought, you know, these players, 18 to 22-year-olds, they want to play in front of their peers. They want their friends coming out to games. And that was the feeling that we got Friday night is we've got the normal community support, which has always been fantastic, but it's so nice to welcome more students at those games.
By the way, historically, yesterday was the 400th win in the history of the program, and Penn State women's soccer history is an illustrious one. How aware are the players are of such things, or should they be?
We put an emphasis on it. Our staff puts an emphasis on playing for those who came before you and understand that it's bigger than yourself, it's bigger than this team, that we've got a history of success and tradition, that it's our responsibility to continue to move on, to move forward. Obviously, last year's national championship was a nice step forward on the program because the program's been knocking for a while. Well before I got here, they were knocking on the door of a national championship. So to get over that hurdle, but it is important to our program to understand that in 1994, when it started, 4 years later, they were winning the Big Ten, and it's just rolled from there. So I think they have to understand that we're part of something bigger.
Yeah, no question about that. Not only that, but the ability to play on Jeffrey Field. You talked about the crowd. 56-4-5 at Jeffrey Field since the start of the 2011 season. What do you see in your players' eyes when they walk on to that pitch with that kind of crowd?
Well, Ironically, the first phone call I made this morning was to Herb Combs, who's the head of our grounds crew on Jeffrey Field. And his first question was, all right, what went wrong? I said, actually, Herb, to the contrary, I can't thank you enough for what you and your guys did to get that field prepared, to make our players feel so special. Because they walked out there and they knew in their heart of hearts that it's the best place in the country to play. So I can't say enough about the grounds crew here at Penn State and what Herb and the guys do on a daily basis, not only on the game field but on our practice field. You know, in the locker room before the game, our players are talking about protecting Jeffrey, and that's a real thing within our program.
You now have a couple of matches under your belt, which means you have some tape under your belt, which means it now gives you some areas to work on and to improve. What are a couple of things right away that stuck out to you and said, okay, we can grow here?
Well, we gave up a goal on a set piece, and last year we gave up 3 goals in total throughout the entire season. We gave up 2 goals this season. Or sorry, we gave up 2 goals this weekend. Last year we didn't give up a goal in the entire NCAA tournament. So right there, obviously defensively, we need to tighten things up. In our attack, we need to play through the midfield more. We've got a good creative midfield, and I thought on Friday night we started to go too direct. We've got Speed and Schaefer and Franny, which is a great weapon, but we also need to make sure we play through our other strengths.
16th-ranked BYU will be here on Friday night as you complete your 3-game homestand. What kind of thumbnail do you have on them?
That's a good BYU team this year. It's going to be a whiteout on Jeffrey Field on Friday night, so yep. It should be another great environment. And this is a team that historically has been at the top of their conference. This year they're picked to win the conference, and they've got a great history and tradition of success as well. So we expect a good BYU team to come into Jeffrey Field on Friday night.
Another great test for you along the way. Part of this is that you try to put together, and you always have tried to put together, either a national schedule, which also then prepares you to get ready for the Big Ten. Is that what you're seeing with the schedule? Like, that's that kind of schedule you want to have?
Well, without a doubt, philosophically, we want to challenge ourselves against the best in the country. And we've done that year in and year out. But alongside of that, we also want to play against some different styles. I think you'll see West Virginia is strong and tough, and they're going to knock you down. And then UCLA is going to try to play around you a little bit, and they're going to try to keep the ball. So to prepare ourselves for the Big Ten and for potential NCAA tournament, we want to make sure we see a lot of different types of teams that can break us down, that we're going to have to deal with some different challenges.
When you dictated the tempo on Friday and you dictated the tempo on Sunday, what did you like? What did you see that was a building block for you when you were able to dictate the tempo?
Well, Nikki Dries has moved into the role of our six, our pivot player. And when she gets on the ball and she's able to help us sustain our attack, good things happen. And that's what wasn't happening enough on Friday night. We saw more of that on Sunday, and we got into their end. We didn't force it as much. We were able to switch the point of attack and get our outside backs more involved. That just wasn't the case at all on Friday night. So we need to find that the players in the midfield that can switch the point and be a little bit less direct moving forward.
Communication is important in every sport, very important in soccer. How well did your players communicate over the weekend?
Well, interestingly enough, that was one of our key points for both Friday and Sunday, and I would give our team a B. It was a huge area of emphasis, so we saw some progress over in training the last week. But when we were on our heels on Friday night, our team got quiet. And that goes to leadership, that goes to emphasis by the coaching staff. And it's a non-negotiable in terms of our program. And, you know, like you said, most sports. But we've got to figure out a way to fight through those moments. Hofstra put a ball in the back of the net, and our team went quiet. And it's easy to talk when things are going well, but those are the moments we need to be better.
Eric, every team develops its own personality unto itself. Do they have one yet, or are they still in the process of developing it in your eyes?
Definitely still in the process, but took some good steps forward this weekend. I think that the reality is, with the uncertainty with what was going on with the under-20s, that was a little bit of an area of emphasis within the program in the spring, because there was just a lot of talk about it. Now where we know where we are, we can move forward with this 2016 team. I thought they took a great step towards that this past weekend, but it's going to take some time to build. We've got to deal with replacing a lot of players with big roles last year, and that's going to take some time.
Yeah, talk about the under-20s for a moment, the prestige of it and for the program, but also what it also means for you as a staff to adjust to it.
Well, the prestige is pretty obvious. I think a chance to play in a World Cup, it's every young player's dream for the most part. And these youth World Cups come up every 2 years, so you can't assume that you'll ever get an opportunity to play in another one. Or statistically, even though you play in a youth World Cup, chances are, you know, you're not going to get a chance to play in the full one. There's only a few players that get that opportunity. So we want to support these goals and dreams of these players. And what it does is allow other players opportunity to step up. And that's what we saw in Charlotte Williams this weekend and Amanda Dennis is, potentially those opportunities wouldn't have been given if those players were still here and Rose Chandler and Emily Ogle. So, as a staff, we've got to look at it as just a chance to provide players opportunity, allow them to grow, and then when we're all back together next year, obviously everybody's better off for it.
Erica, thanks so much. Friday, it's BYU. Best of luck with that, and look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
All right, Erica Dombach and the Penn State women's soccer team.
Erica has done just a great job there. Great job. All right, still to come on the show today, obviously our sports bozo of the day. It actually is something bizarre that happened in last night's State College Spikes game. It has nothing to do with the players, has nothing to do with the manager, has nothing to do with the organization, but I've never seen this happen before. I've never seen it happen before. And it was funny. It was wild. And I'll relate the story to you in the next half hour. The Olympic Games just finished. Penn Staters won 8 medals at the game, 1 silver, 7 bronze. We'll hear from some of the Penn State coaches and get their perspective on the Olympics, including the highlight is going to be what Kale Sanderson thought of the wrestling. And believe me, you're going to be, as a wrestling fan, incredibly interested in what Kale Sanderson had to say about the wrestling competition. That was completely, I mean, to say he was blunt would be an understatement, but it also gives you a real feel into that world. That's what it does. Las Vegas Stadium backers down to 2 top sites to try and attract the Raiders. Of course, we told you earlier in the week how the Raiders have been able to trademark certain elements. And because they have trademarked, including the Las Vegas Raiders name and logo, both of the sites are just west of the Strip. They will refuse to accept anything less than $750 million of public funding toward the project, which they hope will be the home of the Raiders. Majestic Realty and Las Vegas Sands Casino Company updated an oversight committee Thursday on their quest to build a 65,000-seat dome stadium. Very slick renderings, as only Las Vegas can do. They said the price tag continues to rise, now $1.9 billion. Saying that they would walk away from the project if state lawmakers don't meet their minimum financial demand, which is $750,000. Not to be difficult, but we're not negotiable, said Sands President Rob Goldstein, who spoke on behalf of billionaire casino mogul Sheldon Adelson and his family. If we can't get $750,000, we respectfully thank you, but we're going to move on. Must be nice to be in that position. But that's the price tag of stadiums these days. I mean, $1.9 billion, that's the price tag it takes if you want to build a dome stadium. It's Las Vegas. If you play in August and in September, the possibility of the heat being 90 to 105 is still a real possibility. I mean, rain's not a possibility. Not really, not there. I mean, my goodness, I don't think I saw any grass anywhere when I was there in December. I mean, anywhere. The only grass I saw was fake grass. Amazing. All right, next half hour, a look at Penn State in the Olympics. We'll hear from Sandy Barber. We'll hear from Mark Pavlik. We'll hear from fencing coach Wes Glahn. And we're going to hear from Cale Sanderson, who will be the centerpiece of this Olympic report. And our sports bozo of the day is not really a bozo, just something really funny that happened last night in the State College Spikes game. We head to the bottom of the hour. News update coming up next. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, keywords 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. Final half hour of the show. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. The sports bozo of the day, that has nothing to do with the team, nothing to do with the promotion, nothing to do with the players, the manager, the management, anything. Just something thoroughly, completely bizarre that can only happen when you're doing a promotion in minor league baseball. And it was last night at the State College Spikes game. An extremely popular promotion is Cowboy Monkey Rodeo. It happens to be monkeys riding dogs, herding rams and sheep. Now, the first time they had it, nearly 5,400 showed up. So there are only, 170 seats available. Last night, they went 163 over the capacity. They drew 5,733 last night. So it's SRO. So this promotion drew 11,000 fans for the two nights they had it. Amazing. People love it. Well, every time the Spikes score, they have this blue mascot that pops out of what they call the BB&T Nook for BB&T Bank. And they call him the Nookie Monster because of the BB&T Nook. It's that 4'10 cutout in the outfield. So they call it the Nook. So every time the Spikes score, he pops out. Well, last night the Spikes scored 15 times. They won 15-3. Well, on one of them, in the sixth inning, the Spikes score and the Blue Monster pops out of the Nook. Well, it turned out that one of the sheep happened to be grazing back there, and when the door opened, said, "Hey, this is really cool," and jumped through the door because the door was open. And ran onto the field. And they had to stop the game last night because there was a sheep roaming around the field. And they finally had to bring a crew out to eventually, went through center field and kind of wandered toward right. Game was stopped nearly 3 minutes. They finally were able, once it got to the warning track in the right field corner, they were able to take it and haul it in off the field. under the category of I feel like I've seen it all, I now feel like I've seen it all. Story from last night. Also a story of success. That promotion has drawn 11,000 fans in its two outings in a minor league ballpark. Pretty impressive. The Olympic Games taking place. And very pleased with how Penn State did. Eight medals, seven bronze, a silver for Joe Kovacs in shot put. Tie with Indiana for number one of the Big Ten with the eight medals won. Frank Molinaro just missed on another medal for Penn State as he wrestled for the bronze, something that athletic director Sandy Barber very proud of, and very proud of what she saw when she went down to Rio.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about Heart of a Lion as it relates to Penn State, and I think Frank truly represents that. I mean, he's kind of proven that that what you put your mind to and what you put your heart behind and your passion behind that you can truly accomplish. And although certainly there's disappointment in being literally inches and centimeters and seconds from being a medalist in the Olympic Games, I don't think you could be any more proud of Frank. And frankly, for that matter, you know, all of our alums that competed, they all represented themselves and their families and Penn State and their countries in just such a first-class fashion, and I think Frank certainly leads the way on that. And you know, we've not heard the last from Frank.
Nor have we heard the last from Frank, because Frank Molinaro, to his credit, is going to keep going. He's not going to be a volunteer assistant coach for Penn State this year because he did so well and now wants to take a long look at the World Championships. He wants to get himself involved in that at the World Championships. So it's going to be Jake Varner that will be the volunteer coach for Penn State this year. So Frank Molinaro did well. We'll hear from Cale Sanderson in a few minutes. Two fencers. Mana Askamet in women's saber and Miles Chamley Watson in men's foil, both bronze medalists. And Wes Glahn thrilled with what he saw from them.
First of all, I have to say I'm very proud of how they developed. And I know as they came to Penn State, they were not the major players. We had people who were ahead of them, and they both ended up very well, by winning, you know, a medal at the Olympics. Miles, besides the Olympics, he 3 years ago also won individual world championships. That's what, you know, we contribute a lot here in our program to their future success.
No question, and that's Wes Glahn, the head fencing coach at Penn State, as they get two bronze medals, one for the women and one for the men. And then there's the men's volleyball team. Three Nittany Lions on that team. Aaron Russell, Max Holt, and Matt Anderson. It was Anderson who had the kill that won the bronze medal for the United States. Mark Pavlik coached all three.
Andy said, and I thank her for, I'm sure our guys were great to see a little bit of Rec Hall and the Maracana Zeno Arena. All I can add to that is we're certainly the Penn State alumni and following are very proud of them, but the men's volleyball alums, we had a very exciting 16 days, and we reconnected with people that I hadn't heard from for maybe 15, 20 years, that it was really a source of inspiration for us all, both on the men's side and the women's side. It was quite a 16-day run for us.
Certainly was. And, of course, Matt Anderson, who helped key that 2008 national championship at Penn State. Aaron Russell, he's the youngster of the group. The fact that he's even on the team at this early stage of his career is really impressive. And Max Holt, outstanding as well. He helped lead Penn State to the finals 1 year. Great story about Max Holt. Penn State is playing in Rec Hall, and they're playing Cal Irvine in the national semifinals in Rec Hall for the right to play UCLA in the championship. And everything's running late. Penn State's the second game of the night, the whole deal. And it's approaching midnight. And Penn State is now at set point, and Max Holt is going to serve. Right? Set point, Max Holt, he's going to serve. Well, it gets to midnight,
And what happened is that the lights in Rec Hall are on a timer. And when it struck midnight, right before Max was about to serve, the lights went out. So they had to stop the match, obviously. They had to wait, power everything back up. About 20 minutes later, they were able to finally get to match point, and Holt served an ace and won it. Now that's a champion. And then there's Cale Sanderson. We've been talking about this for a couple days. Well, now we're going to get to it. Cale Sanderson, Franklin Gomez wrestled, lost controversy. Molinaro, of course, wrestled. And interesting comments from Cale about all of this and more.
Yeah, I think I believe the main reason that wrestling was nearly dropped from the Olympics. I mean, how do you drop wrestling from the Olympics? It's one of the original sports, if not the original sport. But it's, I think it's based on a lot of the corruption that's very clear, and that comes from, from the Russian countries. You know, and their wrestling's huge. It is probably their best sport. You know, I mean, wrestling, they have dominated from the beginning, and they're still, you know, a notch or two ahead of the rest. It's, you know, Iran's probably 2-3, we're 2-3-4. Azerbaijan is, you know, another Russian country there that's right up in the top three. But it was very disappointing that that it's so blatant and the corruption. You know, you have officials that are either doing favors for their friends or they're being paid. You hear of wrestlers being paid, and you know, we have firsthand experience through the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club. So you know, that stuff goes on. And so after wrestling's almost dropped from the Olympics, none of that has been cleaned up, which is very disappointing, obviously, because, you know, that's and how do you justify? You have a kid, Franklin Gomez, who has trained his whole life, you know, sacrificed a lot, you know, comes from nothing, and he was wrestling extremely well. And, you expect in our sport that the refs are going to give the other, you know, they're going to give him a point here or there, but to just take the match from him when it was very clear, you could see the communication. It's unacceptable, you know. So yeah, it's very disappointing, you know. But it runs real deep into the culture there, you know. It's just I don't think that the Russians and they think that it's wrong, you know. It's just kind of how they operate. That's how the country operates. So, but it is wrong. It is wrong. And the sport of wrestling, you know, our countries need, countries that aren't involved, because several wrestlers got cheated. The Gomez one, they were really exposed, because I think they think, oh, he's from Puerto Rico, you know, no one, it's not a big deal, wrestling's not big there. And, but they, you know, they, I think they got caught. But there's a, throughout the tournament, you see, you're like, man, that's too bad. You know, I think the better wrestler there didn't win that match. You know, 57 kilograms, a Japanese wrestler, I think he got cheated. You know, I don't have any proof of that, but I think you watch the match, and you're like, it came down to a criteria point. The criteria was based on stalling, and the Japanese wrestler was the offensive wrestler the whole time. So, you know, you have to stop and scratch your head and think, well, wait a second here, you know, that's not right. But it's tough because it runs deep. You know, even if you punish the officials over Gomez's match, it's not going to make any difference, because it's, you know, that's like trimming the hedges. I mean, you've got the roots that are deep into the culture of the world wrestling leadership, which is, it's too bad.
I thought that was pretty blunt all the way through from Cale talking about that yesterday. And he didn't stop.
More involved with USA Wrestling, and I'd be all over it. You know, I mean, it's unacceptable. I mean, you have 8-year-old kids, 9-year-old kids, and they're watching the Olympics. You know, how do you get motivated and say, I'm going to commit my life to the sport of wrestling, when you see somebody just clearly be cheated out of a chance to win an Olympic medal? I mean, it's horrible for our sport. And the countries where wrestling maybe is the most high profile, and you go to Russia, the wrestlers are driving Ferraris and Mercedes, and I mean, they're professional athletes. They make millions of dollars, you know. Those are the same countries that are going to get wrestling eliminated from the Olympics. So it's kind of this is just a shame, really. What are you going to do? I mean, it has to start from the top. It's not, well, let's investigate these three officials. Because I was watching them. And when they were told they were out, I didn't see any kind of, there was no argument saying, hey, no, it was a judgment call. It was just, they just quietly just left, you know. There was no protest. It was just too bad. So, and you mean you feel terrible for Franklin Gomez. And the rules, you know, the first thing you got to do, I think, is if you're not big enough as a sport, this is going on and on, I'm sorry, but if you're not big enough as a sport, you know, to deal with, I mean, you're talking about corruption, you're talking about mafia that's involved with sport internationally. You got to change the rules so it's not subjective, right? I mean, we have, our rules are so subjective where the ref can play a part. I mean, you got to eliminate that to the very core. And so you can't just say, oh, it's a judgment call. This guy was stalling, so we give this guy a point. I think that's probably the first thing you have to do is make the rules just extremely subjective, just black and white. They're not.
Well, when he speaks in the wrestling world, you absolutely must listen. Now, obviously, in this country, Cale Sanderson is the face of wrestling in this country. Yes, you have great wrestlers like Jordan Burroughs and obviously Snyder at Ohio State and so forth. But he's the guy that went undefeated in college. He's the one that won the Olympic medal in 2004. He's the one that's never lost. He's the one who's now coached all these national championships, and he's going to get more. And on the international stage, while he is listened to in this country, you ask yourself internationally how much they might listen to him. And I'm not so sure based on that answer, because it is obvious that the Russians, and it's not just that he mentioned the Russians, for example. When he means the Russians, he doesn't just mean Russia. He means Uzbekistan, Azerbaijan, and others that at one point or another were part of the Soviet Union and have broken away, Kazakhstan and so forth. That's what he's talking about, all of those countries. And it's big there. In Iran, he mentions the number two. Well, the corruption runs deep. Now, what Cale Sanderson is interested in, he's interested in two things. He wants it to be fair. He wants the rules to be square. And at the same time, he wants to grow the sport. Well, growing the sport means keeping it in the Olympic Games. And if the Olympic Games is fraught with corruption, you know, because obviously the Wrestling Federation runs it, if it is fraught with corruption, why bother keeping it? And that's what he's worried about. That's what he's concerned about. And I completely understand where he's coming from. And keep in mind, he was not actively coaching there. He was in the stands observing this. And he wasn't just talking about, you know, not so much Frank Molinaro, but obviously he was very upset about Franklin Gomez and what happened to him. But he also mentioned the wrestler from Japan. He said he got, you know, he lost on stalling. He said he was by far the far more aggressive wrestler. He said, you know, and he's as neutral gets. I mean, Cale didn't really care who won. It was just an observation of watching what was happening in wrestling. And he walked away knowing, of course, that, number one, the Olympics barely kept wrestling. They originally were going to drop it. And because of the worldwide feeling toward it, especially in this country, they were able to keep it in. It is, to my knowledge, it's the first time that a sport was cut before the next Olympiad, but then restored after that when they went to the final vote. It's never had happened before. That was the power of the wrestling fan coming through in this country and around the world to make it happen. Now you wrestle it, and what happens is that you have all these decisions that make no sense to anyone within the sport, let alone the fan. It doesn't make sense to the fan. But when someone is in deep in the sport and it doesn't make sense to them, that is a red flag. When it doesn't make sense to the single most respected person and the single most respected voice in the sport in this country, Cale Sanderson, when it doesn't make sense to him, that should send a message to everybody that something is wrong. And that
is the red flag of all red flags when he talks about it and he gets upset about it. Just simple as that. When he talks about it and he gets upset about it, everybody should perk up and listen to it. Now, they're not. When it comes to the international part of it, though, they're not going to listen to him. They got their own deal. They're running it their own way. They're the ones that brought the wrestling to the brink of not being in. And then they obviously conducted the tournament in such a way with officiating and so forth that made him sit in the stands with friends and question what he was watching. One thing you can't have, you cannot have your sport have its integrity questioned. And he was questioning the integrity of what he saw on the mat and how it was officiated. And that's the problem that the sport on the international level has right now. Now, it'll make the cut again for 2020, but if it keeps going down this road, you seriously have to ask yourself whether or not it's still there in 2024. Because when someone, when a respected voice like Cale Sanderson looks around and says, I don't like what I'm seeing, that's not good. Hey, thanks for joining us. Hope you have a great weekend. Looking forward to it. We'll be back on Monday. Jack Ham joins us on the show Monday on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK.